They overwhelm you with their work. They overwhelm you with pressure.
Shoot, they score!
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We had Patrick Crosby score!
Give them 20 minutes of room where they can make a bleed for it, and we did.
If he doesn't sign with Winnipeg Jets in the next couple of weeks, no player will be more coveted.
Dustin Byfuglien posts it in! It's a rocket of a shot!
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Taking off the puck by Little, now for Perreault, back on it from Laine, a shot, he scores! Patrick Laine with his second of the night, 36th of the year, and it's 5-2 Winnipeg!
It's go time, a late edition of NHL This Week with a Legal Curve. You just heard the Manitoba Moose broadcast with Mitch Peacock. The Moose losing by a score of 2-1 to the Grand Rapids Griffins in overtime. Drew Mandel is off this week. Sean, you're awake, ready to go here?
Oh, what? Huh? Sorry. Oh, hey, Izzy.
I got some coffee here if you want to, you know, take a few sips. We've got a great show tonight for you. Hannah Spraker, Anaheim Ducks correspondent for the fourth period, is coming up at 10:30. At 11 o'clock, we're going to be joined by Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News. And then we have an interview that we recorded earlier tonight with Mike Hallford of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk. That's coming up at 11:30. Sean, we're going to start off talking about last night's win, 5-2 win by the Jets over the St. Louis Blues. The Winnipeg Jets sweep the season series. Unbelievable when you consider that the Jets only lost one combined game against the St. Louis Blues and Chicago Blackhawks. They score three goals in 62 seconds in the second period. Patrick Laine picks up a pair of goals. He's up to 36 goals on the season. The Jets now have won five games in a row over Vancouver, New Jersey, Anaheim, Ottawa, and of course the St. Louis Blues. The Jets are now 4-0 after being eliminated from playoff contention, and this is courtesy of Michael Remus. The Jets are now 8-1-2 in the last 2 years after being eliminated from the playoffs. I guess, Sean, your overall thoughts on last night's games? You had a lot going on there. You had goals coming at a furious pace.
Yeah, it was, considering it was a meaningless game for the Winnipeg Jets, it was an emotional one. You know, Alex Pietrangelo scores 35 seconds into the game, and you're thinking, all right, here we go. Like, let's see how they rally now. And then to the Jets' credit, they came out flying after that goal, outshot the Blues 9-4 in the first period, kept it a one-goal game entering the second, and then as you were talking about, Ezzy, a flurry of goals within a span of under 2 minutes for the Jets, Laine, Ehlers, and then the second star of the game, Mark Stewart, with the flip deflection kind of knuckler puck. You're kind of thinking to yourself when that puck goes in, well, this could go the Jets' way. Blues come right back, score, courtesy of Jori Lehterä, a real nice pass from Barbashev there to put it right in the wheelhouse for that one-timer.
And that was right after Mike Yeo called a timeout. Mm-hmm. It happened, I don't know, 30 seconds or something like that, maybe less, after the Blues called that timeout and the Jets had scored three goals. And you mentioned Mark Stewart picks up not only his second goal of the year, but it's the game winner.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you had Mark Scheifele scoring his 31st goal of the year, and he becomes the first Jet 2.0.
Yeah, big night.
To record 80 points. Blake Wheeler gets two assists. He extends his point streak to six games. I want to play Blake Wheeler's post-game scrum from last night, talking about the Jets' victory and, you know, his own performance in last night's game. Here's Blake Wheeler from last night.
How did you see this one today? They got off to a fast start, and you know, we maybe weren't quite ready from the puck drop. We kind of regrouped there and had a couple chances in the first, and then you know, we poured it on right there at the start of the second. So we were able to kind of turn the tide of the game right at the beginning of the second period.
5-0 against St. Louis this season. You know, what's been the magic?
You know, these guys, they've been such a good team over the last number of years, and I think they bring out the best in us. You know, our preparation coming into a game against St. Louis, you know, we know what kind of game it's going to be. It's going to be a really tough matchup. We've played a lot of really close games with them the last few years, and I think this year we just kind of got the puck to bounce our way. And, you know, we had a tough time closing them out, you know, the past 3 or 4 years, and this year we just kind of, you know, got the good bounces to go our way.
I know you've been asked this a couple of times, Blake. I know it's not your favorite question, but I got to ask. I mean, you're stringing so many wins together at this time of year. What's going right now?
Yeah, we just talked about that. We knew you were going to ask that question. I think, there's first off, the older guys have led the way. It's easy to shut it down when you're out of playoff contention, but we have a group of really solid guys who still come to the rink every day excited about their job, and I think the most important thing is that we love what we do for a living. I think we feel fortunate to be able to do this every single day, and that's kind of what we're all about when we come to the rink, is that we're not going to raise the cup this year, but hopefully sometime soon down the road, we're going to be playing games this time of year that are really meaningful. And, you start taking your foot off the gas, it just makes bad habits, and you'll never get to where you want to be.
Offensive ability, though, must really excite you about looking forward with this club, what it can do.
So, we can score goals. That's a hard thing to do in this league. You never want to take that for granted, but now it's about figuring out when enough is enough. That's when we get ourselves into trouble this year, is at a drop of a hat, we can put two or three in, but sometimes it's just not good enough. You want to get four or five, and that's where we get ourselves into trouble. So those things come with maturity, some of the talent on our team jumps off the page, and that's exciting.
Sean, I thought it was funny, the second last comment by Blake Wheeler answering that question from Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press, basically saying that the older guys on the team have been kind of, getting the job done. And, he's obviously referring in a way to himself, right? And then he's kind of also, I think, referring to Mark Stewart and guys like Matthew Perreault, the kind of veterans mm-hmm. of this team, right?
Continue.
Sean, I was just going to say, Blake Wheeler, he's got 9 points in his last six games, 3 goals. And 6 assists, and we know that what to expect from Blake Wheeler. He's been a top offensive producer for the Jets all year, and I think a very telling stat about this Jets team this year, and you'd hope that they would be taking games to the third period leading more, but they're 23-2-2 when leading after mm-hmm. 2 periods with that win over the St. Louis Blues. But he also kind of talked about, why the Jets have been so successful against the Blues, and how this team doesn't have trouble scoring goals, and certainly in that second period when you had goals coming left and right. And I think this team knows that going into next year, they need to get better on the defensive side of the puck. But certainly Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Nikolaj Ehlers, that line. Nikolaj Ehlers extends his point streak to 4 games, I believe.
Yeah, he was flying.
That line, it was the best line on the ice last night.
For sure. And a couple interesting points in that scrum just when you re-listen to it. I like Owen Wheeler said, first of all, Blake Wheeler has the most points in the last 10 days throughout the NHL. So he can defer the praise to whoever he wants. Blake Wheeler is driving the bus right now. He is getting on the ice regardless of the meaningless games that they are playing in, and he's leading the way. He is showing the team what is acceptable with regards to work ethic and drive and production and motivation, and the team is obviously rallying behind their leader, and regardless of their meaningless games or not, it's good to see that A, Blake Wheeler can command the room, and B, he can get the Jets to play the right way.
And that last comment, Sean, when he's saying, we love what we do, he's basically saying that we've got pride, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're going to go out there every night. We only have a couple of games left now. We're going to go out there and we're going to try to win mm-hmm. regardless. And there is no carryover from this year to next year. Once they play that last regular season game, and they hit the golf course, they go on vacation, whatever, and when training camp rolls around, it's a brand new season. So what he's saying there, I think, is with the group that they have right now, these guys have pride, and they still want to beat these teams, regardless mm-hmm. if the team they're playing, like Vancouver or New Jersey, isn't in a playoff spot, or it's a team like the St. Louis Blues, who has clinched a playoff spot, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're playing great at home. They're playing great at home over the last span.
And, you just mentioned that Blake Wheeler has the most points of any player in the NHL over the last 10 days. He's on a 6-game point streak. So, that just further shows you that Blake Wheeler really is the leader both on and off the ice, right? I want to talk about Michael Hutchinson with you, Sean, because he now has 4 wins in his last 5 starts. And I crunched the numbers here. In those 5 games, he's got a .929 save percentage. I want to get your take on Michael Hutchinson's play here in the last week and a half. And then I want to get your take on Eric Comrie, because we found out today, mm-hmm. from TSN 1290's Brian Munns that Eric Comrie not only has been recalled by the Winnipeg Jets, he's going to start tomorrow night against the Columbus Blue Jackets.
A lot of interesting storylines for the Winnipeg Jets today with regards to Comrie and Roslovic. And, yeah, Michael Hutchinson coming into this last stretch of games for the Winnipeg Jets was kind of written off. I mean, regardless if he was going to re-sign with the Jets or not, you look around, who's going to take him around the league? You think maybe this guy might have to start a new career over in Europe or overseas somewhere. But Michael Hutchinson is showing that he's playing for a job, whether it be with the Jets or another team around the league, Vegas, you name it, whoever, free agency approaching. Michael Hutchinson is showing that he's got some game left. It's just only, it's unfortunate that this is kind of the game that the Jets were banking on, maybe at the beginning, midway through the season, and now that they're getting it at this portion of the season, it's kind of anticlimactic, you could say. But Michael Hutchinson showing that he's still got a little bit of game left, and maybe the team is playing a little bit more simple in front of him because maybe the defensive injuries or whatnot, you know, some young defensive players, so they're keeping it simple in front of the goalies. But yeah, Michael Hutchinson is showing that the guy can still make some saves even after taking a stinger on the glove hand wrist.
And, you know, Sean, you mentioned that Michael Hutchinson's future with the Jets is uncertain, right? We know that he's going to be the goalie that's exposed in the NHL expansion draft, and there's a possibility that he spends a lot of time with the Manitoba Moose in the American Hockey League next year. But certainly last night, after letting in that early goal to Alex Pietrangelo, he was very solid. Didn't have to be spectacular, but when you look at the three games before the game against the Anaheim Ducks game, he allowed three goals, and the Jets did pick up the win, so I wouldn't say that that was one of his better performances, but certainly against the Vancouver Canucks, he was excellent, and the previous game against the Anaheim Ducks, a game in which they actually lost, he was very good, making 34 saves, so it is nice, I agree with you, to see Michael Hutchinson finishing the year strong. Now, Sean, to Eric Comrie, how surprised were you to hear that not only Eric Comrie was recalled, we think, because Michael Hutchinson suffered a minor injury during the third period of last night's game, but how surprised were you to hear that Paul Maurice was actually going to start Eric Comrie tomorrow night?
Yeah, when I saw the press release, I was like, whoa, Comrie, like, okay, like, interesting move. I didn't expect that one. I kind of, Kenny Weeb talked about the Roslovic move call-up last week, and that kind of, that got me thinking. I was like, that's a good idea, you know, well played, Ken. This is, I could see happening, but the Comrie one, I figured he would play out the rest of the games with the Moose, get tons of shots down there, but I guess when you're looking at it from a development standpoint, it's probably a good idea for him to head into the summer knowing what he's going to be up against with regards to NHL training camps, with regards to NHL shooters shooting him on him maybe in the preseason. It's good to give him that taste of the velocity and the speed and the timing that he'll have to get used to if he wants to make that next jump. So I love it. You know, he was recalled. He got the call while he was having dinner with his family. He was asked about it. He was having dinner with his family. So a special moment for the whole Comrie clan, and I'm excited to see if he can hack it in the big leagues now, just to see how he's developed.
And, you know, we should mention that Eric Comrie on Tuesday night, just last night, stopped 40-plus saves in a win over the Grand Rapids Griffins.
Yeah, big win.
He's played 48 games with the Moose this year, and obviously, you know, his win-loss record hasn't been great, but anyone that's watched the Manitoba Moose this year will tell you that Eric Comrie has been the team's most valuable player, right? And, you know, that's no disrespect to Jack Roslovic or Kyle Connor or some of the other players on the Moose, but Eric Comrie has been excellent this year. So I think it's great. As you mentioned, Jack Roslovic is a Columbus native.
Yeah.
So he's going to play in front of his friends and family. I agree. It's a great story. And, you know, with two games left in the season, the Jets obviously aren't going to the playoffs. But I think it's pretty special for a guy like Jack Roslovic to make his NHL debut on the road in Columbus with his friends and family cheering him on. And for Eric Comrie, a guy that's played now two seasons with the Manitoba Moose, and before that he played a little bit with the St. John's Icecaps, I think it's well-deserved, because I think when you're talking about Comrie, he's the top goalie prospect in the system. I think they do want to just see what he can offer them at the NHL level. Doesn't mean that he's going to start, you know, 30 or 40 games for the Jets next year, but why not put him in the net? And, you know, Connor Hellebuyck, I imagine, probably plays Saturday night against Nashville.
I assume he'll close out the season at home against Nashville, but I'm happy you brought up Connor Hellebuyck, because it's interesting when you think about it. Maybe it's also kind of sending a message to Connor Hellebuyck saying, we're going to give this guy a game, and we're going to give him the opportunity now to train just as hard in the offseason as any other NHL goaltender because he's got the experience now and he knows what he's going to be up against next year. Connor Hellebuck sees that. He knows he's got someone chasing him now. It's maybe a good motivator for the young goaltender.
And, Sean, Columbus has lost three games in a row, so they're playing for playoff seeding, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
They're not going to win the Metropolitan Division. Washington mm-hmm. is going to win the Metropolitan Division, but when you talk about, you know, the second and third seeds, it looks like Pittsburgh and Columbus are going to play each other in the first round. So that game means a lot to the Columbus Blue Jackets. We're going to head to break right mm-hmm. now. When we come back, we just talked about the Pittsburgh Penguins. We're going to talk about the big news of the day today. Chris Letang is going to miss the entire playoffs. He's going to have surgery on a herniated disc in his neck. So we're going to talk about what that means to the Pittsburgh Penguins' chances of repeating as Stanley Cup champions. You're listening to a late-night edition of NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Hangs onto the puck again. Threw it in front. Hornqvist is there in the battle. Crosby to Letang. He shoots. He scores! There's your answer from the Pittsburgh Penguins, Chris Letang.
Love this song.
Collective Soul. Oh, it's jamming.
Saw Collective Soul about, 6 months ago at the Burton Cummings Theater.
They rock it?
Great show.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Where the river flow.
Welcome back to NHL This Week with a Legal Curve, a late night edition of NHL This Week. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all of your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Sean, we're going to talk about Chris Letang now. We just played the clip.
Yeah.
That was his game-winning goal in last year's Stanley Cup Finals. Terrible news coming out of Pittsburgh.
Real sad.
The Penguins announcing that Chris Letang is going to have to undergo surgery for his herniated disc in his neck, and he's going to miss all of the entire playoffs. And it's horrible news because Chris Letang was arguably a Conn Smythe candidate last year. We know how good Matt Murray was and Sidney Crosby, but Chris Letang was logging 27, 28, 29 minutes a game and was just excellent for the Pittsburgh Penguins. I guess we have to start off with the question, now that Chris Letang is going to miss the playoffs, how does this impact Pittsburgh's chances of repeating as Stanley Cup champions?
It definitely hinders them. You can't begin to describe what a Chris Letang does for your lineup and the impact he'll have when he's not in the lineup. I mean, you want to talk about a puck-moving defenseman that can play the power play, play the penalty kill. He's a physical guy for his size. He's got playoff experience up the wazoo. I mean, you want to talk about a guy that knows how to handle himself in the postseason. I mean, Chris Letang has seen it all when it comes to playoff battles. Real unfortunate. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. He was rehabbing, and they noticed something wasn't progressing properly in his rehab. He had a second MRI. They discovered this herniated disc, out 4 to 6 months now. It's been a real, real tough stretch over the past, I'd say, 3 years for Chris Letang. He's been out February 21st. They resurfaced these symptoms. But going back to 2014, he suffers a stroke. Then he has concussion issues in 2015. In and out of the lineup in 2016 with two upper body injuries. I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins, the silver lining out of this whole situation is this. The Pittsburgh Penguins, and this is coming from Mike Sullivan, I listened to his audio, they know how to game plan without Chris Letang in the lineup. And that's the only silver lining they have moving forward, is that they're kind of used to this situation, which is unfortunate for everyone watching hockey because Chris Letang is one of the most entertaining players to watch. So they kind of know what direction they can take this team in without him in the lineup. That's the silver lining. The reality is, huge blow for the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, and they've already been playing without Ollie Matta and Trevor Daley
Malkin also injured now.
Malkin's been out for the last 10 games. So, I mean, this is going to put a lot of pressure on guys like Ian Cole and Justin Schultz and Brian Dumoulin. But that mm-hmm. really shows you the depth that the Penguins have, right? And how good are those acquisitions of Ron Hainsey and Mark Streit looking right now by Jim Rutherford, right? If you don't go out prior to the NHL trade deadline and acquire Ron Hainsey and Mark Streit, you're really in trouble, right? And
big
a guy
time.
Like Derek Pouliot is another guy that I would expect to see in the lineup, maybe not the last couple games of the year. You might see him in the playoffs if one of these depth defensemen struggles, right? So I agree with you, Sean. Losing Chris Letang for the entire playoffs is just devastating, not just for the Pittsburgh Penguins, but for him personally, because going back 2, 3, 4 years, he's had a variety of injury problems. So the good news for the Pittsburgh Penguins, as we mentioned, is they do still have the depth, and they score more goals than anyone else, right?
Yeah.
So this team can score 3 or 4 goals easily every single night, but that does certainly put pressure on some other defensemen to mm-hmm. pick up those minutes. But you also raised the point that Chris Letang has been out of the lineup since February, right?
Mm-hmm.
So last night, the Pittsburgh Penguins, perfect example, beat the Columbus Blue Jackets 4-1. It's not like the Pittsburgh Penguins have completely faltered here, right? So they have got it done before. I think it's going to be very interesting to see who they match up against in the first round. It looks like it's most likely going to be the Columbus Blue Jackets, a team they played, if you remember, in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and the Pittsburgh Penguins, if I'm not mistaken, won that series in 6. So my question for you then, Sean, is now if the Pittsburgh Penguins without Chris Letang are no longer the favorite to win the Stanley Cup, who's your favorite? Is it Washington? Is it Chicago? Or is it someone else?
I think it has to be the Capitals. I mean, they look like they are primed and ready to roll this postseason. Look what they did to the Maple Leafs last night. A 4-1 beatdown in Toronto, a potential playoff matchup. So that's a message sent right there. You guys want to meet us in the playoffs? We know you're young and talented, but here's a fistful of whatever. And they just jammed it down their throat. I mean, the Washington Capitals, if they can stay healthy and Braden Holtby plays just to the level that everyone is accustomed to him playing, they have to be the favorites entering this postseason. You look at the depth on their roster, from defense to forward to goaltender. I mean, who can roll out 4 better forward lines and a depth 6 pairing of defensemen? I mean, it's scary.
And it's remarkable how healthy the Washington yeah. Capitals have been this
Shattenkirk
year.
Shattenkirk is kind of playing, is peaking right now with the team that they brought him into for that exact reason.
And when you're talking about Kevin Shattenkirk, Sean, you're talking about the biggest acquisition prior to the NHL trade deadline, right? So we know that the Washington Capitals are all in right now. They had 120 points last year. They're right around, what are they at, 112, 114 points right now, wherever they are, 116 actually, pardon me. So they're not going to be that far off last year's pace. They're going to win the President's Trophy.
Oh, yeah.
This is a team that, unless you get to the Stanley Cup Finals, you could even argue that unless the Washington Capitals win the Stanley Cup, this season is going to be a failure. You have one of the best goaltenders in Braden Holtby. I think you have the best group of defensemen in the entire NHL with Carl Alsner, Matt Niskanen, John Carlson. We mentioned Shattenkirk,
mm-hmm.
Nate Schmidt, Dmitry Orlov. I mean, this is a great
Stacked.
Group of defensemen,
Stacked.
And they're good top to bottom. They have 4 good lines. You know, this is the time that Washington has to take advantage of this opportunity, because even though the Pittsburgh Penguins don't have a Chris Letang or possibly Evgeny Malkin for the last couple of games of the season, I mean, this Capitals team right now is healthy, so they have to take advantage of it. And when you're talking about the Chicago Blackhawks, we know that they have been the best team in the Western Conference this year with the Minnesota Wild struggling, but the difference between the Blackhawks and the Capitals is that the Blackhawks have done it before. They've mm-hmm. won 3 Stanley mm-hmm. Cups in the last 8 years, right? So I would have to agree with you, though, right now. And it's not just on paper, but it's because the Washington Capitals, I personally think that they want to get over that hump.
Well,
and you know that second round matchup is most likely coming, right?
It's going to be great.
Because you mentioned that Toronto could end up playing Washington in the first round. There's a good chance that happens, even though the seeding in the Atlantic Division, it could be Boston, it could be Ottawa. But certainly if it's Washington and Toronto, I mean, Toronto's a nice story, and Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and William Nylander have had great rookie season, amongst others. I just think that's going to be too much for the Toronto Maple Leafs to handle, that group of defensemen there. We know it's not the best group of defensemen for the Leafs, even though a guy like Morgan Rielly and Nikita Zaitsev have had great years. I would pick Washington over the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, yeah.
I could see the Leafs winning a couple games maybe, but I don't see them winning 4 of 7.
No. Maybe squeaking out an overtime win or something along those lines. But Washington, if they meet, Washington has planted that seed of doubt. Last night, they went in and literally destroyed the Maple Leafs on their home ice, where they have been playing exceptionally well as of late. I just feel that with all the talk, and we'll talk about the playoff, we're going to talk about the Leafs later on in the show, but I just feel with all all the razzle and dazzle of the Maple Leafs roster, they are very inexperienced when it comes to the postseason. And the regular season is one thing in the NHL, but everyone knows that once you get to the big dance, they better tighten up those dance shoes because it gets rough.
And, Sean, if you're Brian McClellan and the Washington Capitals don't go far in the playoffs this year, what do you do, right? You've got an absolutely stacked team. Not only do you have one of the top offenses in the league, you have one of the best group of defensemen in the league. You've got the goaltender. So, really, what do you do? Because you're going to have to re-sign Carl Alzner. We don't know if they're going to sign Kevin Shattenkirk. I would imagine that Kevin Shattenkirk tests the UFA waters. Mm-hmm. I think there's probably the most pressure on the Washington Capitals to go far. Getting to the second round is not going to cut it this year.
No.
Probably going to the third round is not going to cut it. This team wants to hoist Lord Stanley's mug this year, and there's no reason to think that they can't do it. Maybe that you run into a hot goaltender, but certainly if you're playing the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round, you should be able to get past them. And then when you're talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins, they're going to be without Chris Letang. Mm-hmm. They're not as deep as they were last year, even though they made some nice acquisitions on the blue line. This is the year, I think, for the Washington Capitals. Not saying that they're necessarily just going to give them the Stanley Cup right now, but certainly they have the team to do it.
And they watched the San Jose Sharks kind of get the monkey off their back last year. The Sharks obviously notorious for being unable to progress into the playoffs. And now the Capitals kind of sitting alone, and they want to shed that title as well. And you talked about it a few minutes ago, Ezzie. This team probably feels that right now is their best opportunity. And
I think so.
But they're probably uncertain about the future with all the players on their roster. Who knows? Ovi might have his contract terminated after next year if he goes to the Olympics, you know? So there's a lot of uncertainty surrounding the Washington Capitals if they don't achieve what they set out to this year. And you know what? I'd like to see them go on a run. I'd like to kind of see what Ovi and Backstrom can do on a playoff run and see how far they can go and see what kind of exciting style of hockey. Because the Capitals are physical. They bring it. So it should be an entertaining playoffs if they can get their stuff together and carry through.
Sean, we're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Hannah Spraker, Anaheim Ducks correspondent for the fourth period. You're listening to NHL This Week, late night edition on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
We're back on a late night edition of NHL This Week on TSN 1290. It's Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor. Drew Mandel is off this week. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline by Hannah Spraker, Anaheim Ducks correspondent for the fourth period. Hannah, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Good evening. How are you?
We're doing very well. It's late in Winnipeg. I know it's a couple of hours earlier there in Anaheim, but we're doing well. We came on after the Manitoba Moose game and went to overtime, so we're going to be out of here a little bit late. So that's no problem. We've got coffee. And how are things going with you?
They're good. It's been a busy day. Been coordinating a wedding happening Friday, so I've been running all over the place.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have a wedding myself coming up, so I know it's coming up in August, so I know what it's like to plan a wedding, but we're not going to get into that right now.
Yeah.
Hannah, last night's game between the Ducks and Flames, a game in which the Ducks won 3-1, sweeping the home-and-home series. Tensions flared in that third period after Flames captain Mark Giordano collided knee-on-knee with Cam Fowler of the Anaheim Ducks. It knocked him out of the game, and after that, Josh Manson fought Mark Giordano, and there were 106 combined penalty minutes in that third period. I guess two-part question. Did you think that was a dirty hit? And do we have a latest injury update on Cam Fowler?
Latest injury update I heard is he had an MRI today, and he's listed as day today. In terms of it being a dirty hit, I don't think so. I think I kept watching the replay over and over in slow motion, and he intended to make contact, but I don't think he intended hit his knee. He was putting weight on that knee to brace for contact, and you can see as he's trying to thrust his upper body forward, but it was just kind of an awkward way that it hit Cam's knee, and his knee bent away it should not have. I wouldn't be surprised if Cam was out for the rest of the summer. When I mean, I've seen some pretty bad injuries happen in that exact way. So I think that it would be devastating for the Ducks to lose Fowler for the postseason. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's a bad knee injury.
Hannah, as he talked about Josh Manson, did he kind of elevate himself as one of the most popular guys on the Ducks bench and at the Honda Center last night for stepping up and fighting Mark Giordano?
Yeah, kind of. But I feel like if he didn't do it, someone else mm-hmm. was. I mean, you can hear read in the postgame quotes of anyone. I mean, Bieksa said that it's like, you know, obviously we're going to retaliate when we see something like that. And, you know, Manson was the one to do it. And he's been really proven himself as a force on that blue line and a fighter. And he's kind of taking over Jared Bowles, like, quote-unquote enforcer role. So, yeah, I think he definitely stepped up. And, I mean, when something happens like that and you see a hit that could be deemed dirty or a guy gets, you know, escorted off the ice, I think one of the teammates are bound to step it up. And I think Manson's kind of stepped into that role as that go-to guy.
Hannah, you just mentioned Ducks defenseman Kevin Bieksa. He scored last night, which ended a 47-game goalless drought. And I went and looked back at his career stats. He's played 79 of 80 games this year, the most games he's played since 2007 when he was a member of the Vancouver Canucks. How important is his veteran presence for this young Anaheim blue line?
I think his presence is a lot more a locker room presence that is necessary than actually on the blue line. I mean, everyone talks about the expansion draft and his no movement and that whole rabbit hole, but he's probably one of the funniest guys I've ever talked to. And he's so lighthearted and he makes everyone laugh in the locker room. And he's a veteran and he's kind of that guy that, you know, you look to make you laugh in those tense moments, and all the guys love him. He's a great guy, great heart and soul kind of guy. His stats definitely do not prove very impressive. And I think that, you know, he's getting up there in age and it's showing. But I think his purpose a lot more so than physically in the game is that locker room guy that just, he's a veteran in experience and he's a veteran in being a leader on the team, whether that's to crack smile or to give some advice. But yeah, I think that he doesn't exactly play to his contract as a veteran, but that's in the whole nother story.
Hannah, obviously it's everyone knows that playoff hockey is the utmost of entertaining. Based on the series between the Flames and Ducks that we saw, the two-game series over the past week, is it fair to say that hockey fans salivating over a Ducks-Flames playoff series?
I would like to see a Ducks-Flames playoff series. I think that that's the best matchup that the Ducks could have going into the first round. I was actually looking at the stats today for the goaltenders, and I was looking at Elliott. He's in his career against the Ducks, he's 1-7, 8.84 save percentage, 3.20 goals against. And then I looked at Gibson and Bernier. Bernier's 7-2 against the Flames, 9.14 save percentage, 2.45 goals against, and Gibson is 7-1 against the Flames, 9.26 save percentage, 1.84 goals against. So I think I also went over, you know, how many times they played them this season. They have 17 goals for and 14 against when playing Calgary. I think out of any possibilities for a matchup, that is the one that they're going to want going into the first round. And, you know, everyone jokes about it, but there's got to be something to that Honda Center curse for mm-hmm. the Flames. I mean, the last time that they won in that building, Nokia phones were the norm. And
sorry, what?
MySpace was the top social networking site. And just 2004 was the last time they won in that building and in the regular season, and 2006 in the playoffs. So, I mean, it's been over a decade that this team has been able to beat the Ducks at Honda Center. So, I mean, I think that kind of, that does play a little bit into, I think, at least the mindset of the players going into that. I mean, I'd be kind of a little bit wanting to maybe gripping my stick a little too tight to want to break that.
Yeah, Hannah, just for the record, I still maintain my MySpace page.
I did a whole piece on it that a couple of years ago. I listed everything that was popular in 2004, and it was just hilarious to see how long it's been since the Flames have actually been able to beat the Ducks in Anaheim. And they've proven that they can bend the Ducks, but the Ducks just won't break.
We're joined by Hannah Spraker, Anaheim Ducks correspondent for thefourthperiod.com, talking about what was popular back in 2004. The Anaheim Ducks can clinch first place in the Pacific Division with a win tomorrow over the Chicago Blackhawks. Is it important to win the division mainly to avoid playing the Sharks in the first round?
I think that, especially with Carlisle coming back as, you know, the coach once again, I think it's important for the Ducks and Carlisle to win the division. I think that Calgary is the most attractive matchup, but I don't think San Jose would be an awful matchup either. I mean, they play a similar game style to Anaheim. You know, it's not like they'd be chasing a McDavid around the ice the whole time. The travel schedule's easier than, say, you know, Nashville, like they had last year. And, you know, when they went 3-2 this season against the Sharks, and they had, what was it? I think it was 11 goals for and 10 goals against. So it's really not, I don't think playing the Sharks would be that as bad as people might think it would be. Because you see, you know, a team that went so far last year in the playoffs and that kind of, you know, freaks people out a little bit, and everyone says, oh, it's their year or whatever. But, I mean, when you look at how the Ducks have played against certain teams, I think that's what you really need to focus on when you look at these playoff runs, as opposed to where these teams are in regards to the whole league.
Hannah, Patrick Eves now has 8 goals in his last 9 games, 10-18 with the Ducks. Safe to say that he was by far the best NHL trade deadline acquisition around the league?
I would think so. And Bob Murray is so good at doing that. I don't know how he does it. Each year, he just gets that one little puzzle piece that fits in the right spot, the right place to do the perfect thing that the team needs at that time. And everyone tries to guess what kind of move he'll make, and no one ever guesses it. But I even turned my nose up at that when I first, you know, heard of Eves Anaheim. But he has been absolutely phenomenal. Just watching him game after game, he has been huge for Anaheim, and especially scoring depth and being just that a good go-to guy. That has been so important to split up Getzlaff and Perry and have another like bona fide goal scorer in the lineup. And yeah, there's still a missing piece moving forward and whatnot, but he has been absolutely phenomenal for Anaheim.
By the way, Hannah, when you were answering that last question, I Googled best new artist from 2004 at the Grammy Awards, and it was Evanescence. So that just gives you some type of idea of what was popular back in 2004, Evanescence, and Sean Paul was also tearing up the charts. Hannah, how has John Gibson looked in his first 2 games back from his injury?
He looked good. I mean, last night, he bailed them out heavily. I mean, the shots on goal in the first period were 11-3 Calgary, and, I mean, they got outshot the entire game. It was 27-20, I think, was the final shots on goal count. But he's looked pretty good. I mean, he's a goaltender that will definitely bail out his team when they need him to, and that's huge going into playoffs. And while he definitely doesn't have a good playoff reputation and a good playoff record, I think everyone's hoping that that'll turn around, and I think this is really his opportunity to show that he is a playoff goaltender. I mean, everyone, you know, Bruce Boudreau got fired last year for not being a playoff coach, and I think this is Gibson's opportunity to really step up and show that he can perform and be reliable to bail his team out when need be in the playoffs. But I think he's been doing well coming off of injury, and I mean, I think everyone hopes that he can keep it up. Again, I've always been a little bit weary of him just because he is so prone to injury. So that's always just kind of – that's always been in the back of my mind. Like, he is great, but can he stay healthy is the issue.
Yeah, speaking of health, Hannah, Hampus Lindholm missed last two games, upper body injury. Any concern that the defenseman won't be ready for the postseason?
I think, yeah, especially with Fowler being day-to-day. I think that from what I hear, Lindholm should be back for the postseason. I think that this team has shown that they have a blue line that is capable of filling gaps where they need to. I think that they can definitely survive without Lindholm or Fowler, but I don't think that they can survive without both. So I think that might mean Theodore Montour might get more minutes, Manson, and these. Yeah, the Fowler injury could end up being pretty bad for the Ducks, just as one of their best players being out going into the postseason. That's never what you want to hear. But I think if they can get Lindholm back, that will definitely behoove them going into the playoffs. I think it's just the fact of missing both and Holzer. Corbani and Holzer just went on a week of personal leave with some family issues. So he'll be back for the playoffs, but they're down three defensemen right now going into these next two games.
Hannah, final question for you here. How much pressure do you think there is on the Anaheim Ducks to go far in the playoffs? And if they don't end up going far in the playoffs, do you see major changes coming for this team?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think there's tons of pressure. Bob Murray said that this is the last shot he's given to this team. And that was, you know, months ago when the rumors were circulating about Cam Fowler and whether he was going to get traded out. And that was kind of Bob Murray's way of saying, nope, he's staying here. We're going to give this team one last shot. And, you know, the window is closing for this team. It's kind of cup or bust at this point. So I think they have Getzlaff and Perry and Bieksa and Kessler, all these veteran guys that are getting older, I think they have two, maybe 3 years before it's a bit of a rebuild on the forward end of things. They have enough on the blue line to make that rebuild fairly easy. But, yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure going into this that if it doesn't happen, that there is going to be some big moves to be made. And I think for the veteran guys on this team, they only have a couple years left before their window closes. And yeah, it's cup or bust for this team because Bob Murray's been pretty crystal clear about that one.
Hannah Spraker is the Anaheim Ducks correspondent for thefourthperiod.com. Hannah, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right. Enjoy the first round of the playoffs.
You as well.
All right, guys, let's head to break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs. They can clinch a playoff spot tomorrow night against the Tampa Bay Lightning. But we're going to talk about how far we think this Toronto Maple Leafs team can go. If they play the Washington Capitals, Sean, I don't know how far they can go. You're listening to NHL This Week, a late night edition on TSN.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Nylander for the Leafs has it. Nylander, a nifty little play. He finds Matthews shooting. Scores! Holy mackerel! That Nylander pass was brilliant. Austin Matthews all alone now. 67 rookie points.
39 goals for Austin, the boy wonder Matthews.
He's good. He's good.
This segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. We mentioned it prior to the break, Sean, the Toronto Maple Leafs, who lost their last game to the Washington Capitals, they can clinch a playoff spot tomorrow night, and the Tampa Bay Lightning will be eliminated from the playoffs if they don't win. The Tampa Bay Lightning have struggled a little bit here down the stretch. The Toronto Maple Leafs have not. They've won 7 of their last 10 games. We know the story of the Toronto Maple Leafs has really revolved around their super rookies, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, William Nylander. You can also throw in Zach Hyman into the equation. Nikita Zaitsev is also a rookie.
Connor Brown.
I mean, the list seems to just go on and on, right? The Toronto Maple Leafs, the story has just been how good the rookies have been and the goaltending, right, Sean?
Yep.
The Toronto Maple Leafs went out in the offseason and they acquired Freddie Anderson, and Jonathan Bernier obviously kind of switched places with him and went to the Anaheim Ducks. But Freddie Anderson has been excellent. Actually, Curtis McIlhenny has done an excellent job in a backup role, too. So we know that most likely, barring something unforeseen, and that would be the Toronto Maple Leafs losing their last 3 games of the year, they're going to the playoffs. Now, the question is, how far do you think the Toronto Maple Leafs can go? It looks like they will probably play the Washington Capitals in the first round, but there is the chance that they move into third in the Atlantic Division and maybe end up playing the Ottawa Senators. But the Ottawa Senators could also move into a wild card spot. So it could be basically the Leafs could play one of 3 teams. It's either going to be the Washington Capitals, the Ottawa Senators, or the Boston Bruins. How badly do you want to see Toronto versus Ottawa in a first round matchup? Because that's what I want to see.
It's the only series I really want to see. Like, any other mixes and matches, fine, I'll watch, I'll be entertained, it'll be amazing. But to see the potential of Dion Phaneuf scoring against the Maple Leafs that could end a series, could you imagine anything more amazing to watch?
Maybe Pittsburgh versus Toronto. We know that's not going to happen, right?
That would be fun.
But then you have a rematch with Phil Kessel facing his former team, right? But
Boston, they have the comeback.
Exactly.
They redeem that comeback.
And it's just great, you know, and to see the Toronto Maple Leafs back in the playoffs. And I realize they're not the most popular team with most people here in Winnipeg, but I think it's always a great thing the more Canadian teams you have in the playoffs, right? And you're going to have 5 Canadian teams in the playoffs this year after having none last year, right, Sean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the question really comes down to, does Toronto have enough depth to really beat a team like the Washington Capitals? And I just don't think they do. We talked about it during the second segment. I could see the Toronto Maple Leafs winning 1 or 2 games against the Capitals, but I just don't see them winning 4 of 7.
No, Mike Babcock was not happy with his team following that game. Said that they were bigger, stronger, faster, called it a one-sided affair, said they were flat out better. And like we were talking about earlier, Ezzy, I think the Leafs got a taste of what the postseason could look like for them. And when you look at the depth, I don't think anyone has the depth that Washington has with regards to productivity and a team that scares me in the postseason. But I think what's working more against the Maple Leafs is their youth and the inexperience in the playoffs. A lot of rookies on that team that were carrying the load throughout the entire season. And it's a whole new ball game once you get to the postseason. It's bigger, it's faster, it's stronger, it's ramped up. Every check is finished. What happens in the first couple games if Matthews or Marner or Nylander go down? I mean, can Toronto rally mentally around the loss of one of their super rookies? What if Anderson goes down? I mean, there's a lot of what-ifs in that situation, but I just feel that with regards to experience, I think the Maple Leafs are clearly, it's going to be an eye-opening experience for the Maple Leafs and everything that involves the postseason. But then again, the ACC is probably going to be rocking. Like, those fans are probably going to be excited for. And I know Toronto's not exactly the most notoriously crazy building, but you hope the fans give the players something to get on the ice and be motivated for.
Well, the first 10 rows in the Air Canada Centre are empty until, 10 minutes into the first period?
Yeah, fill those corporate seats. Let's get some.
Everybody's drinking, you know, fine wines and eating sushi at ACC, right, Sean? But
sounds like a
great
time.
Yeah, it actually sounds great. Let's hit Toronto. When you talk about the playoffs, you mentioned, Sean, that everything ramps up, and it's all about matchups, right? Mm-hmm. And we talked about the Washington Capitals earlier when we were talking about who's really the favorite to win the Cup right now. And when you're talking about the top line of Backstrom, Ovechkin, and Oshie, who are you putting up against that line, right? Most likely it's going to be Morgan Rielly with Connor Carrick, or it's going to be Morgan Rielly with Nikita Zaitsev. And then if you're putting that pair up against the Backstrom line, well, then you've got the line of Kuznetsov, Williams, and Johansson, mm-hmm. the Capitals' second line, and then you're basically going to put up, you know, the Jake Gardner pair up against that line, right? Depending on if it's Connor Carrick or Nikita Zaitsev on the top pair. But the Toronto Maple Leafs' top four defensemen, I think, you know, they've done a decent job, but when you're going up against a top offense like the Washington Capitals, and then you have a lot of depth on even the third line, right? You've got Lars Eller there on the third line. I mean, this team is just so deep.
They're rolling.
So I think a lot is going to depend on the matchup. If the Toronto Maple Leafs are able to maybe squeak in to third or second in the Atlantic Division and get a better matchup, for example, if it is the Toronto Maple Leafs versus the Ottawa Senators, I could see the Leafs beating the Senators mm-hmm. in a seven-game series. Okay. I don't think the Ottawa Senators are that good. We just saw the Jets beat them.
Mm-hmm. And they're slumping.
And the Senators really, let's be honest, have relied on their goaltenders too much. In my opinion, Craig Anderson and Mike Condon have given them excellent goaltending this year, but they haven't got that secondary scoring, right? I mean, we know Erik Karlsson is their top scorer.
And he's wearing down. They've been riding him hard all year, and he's starting to break down now. We see it throughout, you know, he returns, hits the boards hard, has to leave the game again. It's things are kind of imploding on the Senators right now.
Right, and if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, shutting down Mark Stone and Mike Hoffman is a lot easier than shutting down Alexander Ovechkin, Nicholas Backstrom, you know, Evgeny Kuznetsov, Justin Williams. I mean, we could go on and on and on. The Washington
I'm looking
Capitals,
at this roster. It's crazy.
Right.
It's crazy.
Right. And that's why, really, the Capitals, you know, should be the favorite right now. But, hey, once the puck drops and the first round starts, we've seen, I mean, who expected the Pittsburgh Penguins to win the Stanley Cup last year, right? It was because mm-hmm. of the depth players that they acquired, guys like Justin Schultz and Nick Bonino and Carl Hagelin, that really elevated them to one of the premier teams in the playoffs, right? But certainly when you talk about the Leafs, it's going to be great just to see them back in the playoffs. They haven't been in the playoffs in, what, 5 years now?
Mm-hmm.
Since 2011?
Since the collapse against Boston.
6 years. So it's great to see them back, but matchups are really going to dictate whether they're able to get past that first round, because if the Capitals get out in the first round, that's going to be the biggest shocker that we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, and you talk about the matchups, and one of the Leafs' best defensive forwards, Brian Boyle, took a monstrous hit from Tommy Wilson of the Capitals last night. He's out day-to-day, they're saying. So you talk about not only a physical presence, a defensive-minded centerman, but a guy with tons of playoff experience that I'm sure the Maple Leafs brought in to help guide these young rookies is now only going to be a voice in the room and not exactly a player on the ice for the time being. Huge loss for the Maple Leafs.
Sean, we mentioned the third line earlier. The third line of the Capitals, Lars Eller, Andrei Burakovsky, and Brett Connolly right now. And, you know, the lines switch. But, I mean, that is a good second line on many teams,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So much depth on this Capitals team. But back to the Leafs, I mean, I just think, again, it's going to be great just to see them back in the playoffs. As far as I'm concerned, some people don't share this view, the Leafs haters out there, but I think it's great that they're back in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
And again, you know, it'll just be nice to see Leaf Nation going crazy, and hopefully, you know, they're able to win a few games.
Plus, it'll be neat to see if Austin Matthews can up his game even more. I mean, the Wonderkin is entering the postseason for the first time in his career. I mean, let's see what he can do.
And even with Patrick Laine having an amazing rookie year, I think there's no doubt that Austin Matthews has pulled away in the Calder Trophy race.
People are saying the two goals last night kind of have closed the gap a little. I don't buy it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Laine only has two games left, so he's going to have to score at least four goals, right?
Not impossible.
Sean, let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our good friend Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News. You're listening to a late-night edition of NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
On your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Top of the hour, welcome back to a late night edition of NHL This Week with Illegal Curve. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by our good friend Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, how are you tonight?
Good, good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. We're doing very well. Before winning their last two games against the Vancouver Canucks, the Sharks had lost seven of their previous eight games, and they've got a couple of games left here, Curtis. How important are these last two games, and how concerned are the Sharks with the way they've played over the last 10 games?
Well, it's important for these guys to play well against good teams. The stat came out. I was able to see it there. They haven't beaten a playoff team in the Western Conference since they beat Chicago on January 31st. So this team has a little bit to prove to itself before they go into a first-round matchup, looking like it's going to be against the Oilers. And you'd certainly like to be able to kind of set the tone a little bit going into a playoff series with the win tomorrow night. But it's going to be difficult. If this team doesn't get good goaltending, if this team doesn't play well in its own end, then it tends to struggle because usually they don't score more than 2 or 3 goals per game right now. So kind of a rough stretch for the Sharks right now. They just need to, maybe start to feel good about itself before they start the playoffs.
Curtis, as someone who's lost a couple teeth playing hockey myself, I'm sympathetic towards Logan Couture. I saw that he spoke to the media yesterday. Curious how his spirits are, and is there a timetable yet for his return?
No timetable just yet. He was on the ice today for the first time skating. I mean, it's no problem being out there for 10 or 15 minutes skating around, doing some work with the puck, that kind of thing. But as far as playing a 60-minute game, being out there for 3 periods, he's not quite there yet. He's still having a little bit of trouble breathing. He has what's called an arch bar in his teeth right now, which is kind of holding everything together. That's kind of makes it a little bit of a challenge to breathe. So he's not quite there yet. He's in better spirits now than certainly when he was, 8 or 9 days ago. But can't say for sure when he's going to be back. But if I had to guess, I'd say he'd be ready to go for the start of the playoffs either next Wednesday or next Thursday.
We're joined by Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Curtis, what was the reaction from Sharks players to the news that the NHL won't be sending its players to the 2018 Winter Olympics in South Korea?
Well, we talked to both Joe Pavelski and Mark-Edouard Vlasic yesterday. Joe was a little bit more diplomatic. Obviously, he was disappointed not getting a chance to go, but he, tried to say all the right things and still wasn't quite maybe giving up the possibility that they might be able to go to South Korea. But obviously, Mark-Edouard was a little bit more vocal, a little bit more, a displeasure with the NHL's decision. He kind of made a point that, if no one has a problem with us getting injured potentially in a World Cup, why would they be worried all of a sudden about potentially getting hurt in the Olympics? It seems to be kind of a two-way street or one, kind of a little bit of oxymoron, I guess you could say. But he was a little bit very disappointed that in the NHL's decision. He's not at the point where he might be an Alex Ovechkin type guy and decide to go on your own, but kind of thing. But he's probably the most disappointed guy as far as not having a chance to go and represent Canada. I think deep down, probably Joe Pavelski is probably in that same boat, not getting a chance to go back to play the Olympics and maybe try to win a gold medal for Team USA, which would be pretty darn good when you look at some of the young talent that they'd have coming up as well. So I think both guys are disappointed. Maybe Mark-Edouard was just a little bit more open about it, I guess.
Curtis, Joe Thornton missed last night's game at Vancouver with a knee injury. Any concern he won't be able to go for the start of the playoffs? And if that's the case, I mean, are the Sharks in trouble with their 1-2 centermen not being 100% entering the postseason?
Oh, I'd say that they'd definitely be in trouble if neither guy would be able to play in game one or at least somewhere near the start of the series. Joe talked today. He said he was very confident he'd be able to play once the start of the playoffs. I don't know if he was even joking a little bit that he said, hey, maybe I could play tomorrow against the Oilers or Saturday against the Calgary Flames. But he's You're very confident you'll be able to go once the start of the playoffs. And, you know, you talk to guys around the room you know, it really hits Joe when he's not able to, play. Last night's game against, I guess the Canucks was the 10th time he hasn't been able to play a game for the Sharks, since he's been with the team over the last 12 years, eight times were through injury, and then a couple games he had a two-game suspension a few years ago as well. So he's very confident that he'll be able to play in game one of a playoffs. Whether or not he's the same guy with the same range of motion, with the same skating ability, you know, we'll wait and see. But at least you have a guy there, that presence, who could you know, potentially lead a power play and you know, kind of lead that at least the team emotionally, at least in the locker room and going into the start of the playoffs.
Curtis, you mentioned earlier that it looks very likely that a first-round matchup between the San Jose Sharks and Edmonton Oilers is going to occur. How do the Sharks match up against the Oilers, in your opinion?
Well, I think it depends if, you know, if you have Logan Couture available. I think he would probably be the guy that Pete DeBoer would look at as being someone who counter the best player on his team, who'd be able to counter, you know, a guy like Connor McDavid. And obviously you'd have a defensive pair like Vlasic and Braun being out there a long time as well. So I think the Sharks would have a lot of problems with the Oilers' speed and their explosiveness. I think we saw the last time they played up in Edmonton that Sharks played a pretty good game, but it was just a matter of, you know, two, three mistakes, and they wound up in the back of the net. And, you know, the Sharks would almost have to play kind of a perfect game defensively to sort of, you know, kind of keep the Oilers to under three goals. So I think depth-wise, maybe the Sharks have a bit of an advantage. You know, when you're talking about their third and fourth lines, that's assuming, of course, that Thornton and Couture are able to play. So I think the Sharks would have a tough time containing that Oilers top line with McDavid, Draisaitl, and Maroon. But when you look at maybe the depth, I think that's where the Sharks probably have the advantage. And maybe try to wear down a team like the Oilers over a six or seven game series. You got to wonder maybe a little bit about Cam Talbot, his workload this year, and how much he'll have left for maybe a six or seven game playoff series.
Curtis, I'm just curious, how has Yannick Hansen looked since being acquired at the trade deadline?
Well, he's looked pretty good. You know, maybe a tad inconsistent. I mean, he was up on the top line with Pavelski and Thornton when he first got to the Sharks, and they played pretty well together. They seem to have some chemistry, but just recently, over the last four or five games, DeBoer has moved Hansen back to the third line with Tomas Hertl and Mikael Bodker. And by and large, that's been a pretty good line. They did not play. They weren't terribly noticeable. Maybe last night against the Canucks, it seemed to struggle a little bit on the forecheck, creating chances, that kind of thing, maybe a little bit in their own end as well. So, but it appears to be a line that I think that DeBoer is kind of considering keeping, at least for the start of the playoffs. They seem to play better with each other than without each other. So overall, Yannick Hansen's been a nice addition for this team. Gives him a little bit more depth, a guy who can kill penalties, and just fits in well with Pete's system and what he wants his wingers to do. So I think he's been a pretty good addition here for the Sharks. And of course, everybody's going to be judged on how they do in the playoffs. So maybe just wait and see and give them a final grade after the year.
We're joined by Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Curtis, obviously Brent Burns has been the talk coming out of San Jose, and rightly so. He's got 74 points, and he's most likely going to win the Norris Trophy, even though Erik Karlsson's going to have something to say about that. But does Paul Martin get enough respect for how good of a defense partner he's been for Brent Burns?
Well, I think in some ways, yeah. I mean, whenever you talk to Brent about you know, why he feels he's having such a great year, even last year as well, I think he'll talk about you know, the coaching staff, the confidence that they've given him, and also the play of Paul Martin, the way he's able to play maybe a little bit more of the conservative role, you know, stay back a little bit when Brent decides to join the rush, or you know, try to create an odd man rush or pinch in, you know, in the offensive zone. So having a guy like Paul will, you know, more often than not, has really allowed Brent to flourish offensively, and I think, you know, obviously, you know, defensively too, it helped the Sharks' depth, just having a guy like that there who's can fill a bunch of roles and is a respected leader in that room and is able to kind of be our sort of a calming presence, a guy who's been in a lot of playoff battles before and figures he's going to be a pretty important asset here for the Sharks coming up, especially if they run into the Ducks or the Oilers here in the first round.
It's interesting, Curtis, when you talk about Brent Burns, he came out of the gate this season just scoring at a phenomenal pace, and he's cooled as of late. I'm curious what you're seeing from him. Is it just the pucks aren't going in as we wind down the season, or is something changed with regards to his play? Is he kind of sitting back? What have you seen from the offensive defenseman?
Well, I think he might be shooting a little bit less, overall, maybe over the last 3-4 weeks. It's not for a lack of effort, I don't think. I mean, sometimes it's just a matter of getting the bounces. And sometimes he'll point to that. He'll say, "Listen, it's not a matter of not getting chances or not creating enough chances. It's just sometimes you run a little bit cold." And it's interesting. And when he goes cold and no one else fills that sort of void, that's when the Sharks go on, the 5-6 game losing streaks and losing 7 of 8. It's still a phenomenal season. And sometimes, it was been maybe hard pressed to sort of keep up that pace for 82 games. But you're right. I mean, still a tremendous season, looking every bit like a Norris favorite at this stage, and a guy who's going to be counted on a lot, especially if you don't have Logan Couture or Joe Thornton to start a playoff series. He's going to be the main guy. He's going to get the most ice time and probably have to create a lot of the offense as well.
Curtis, last question for you here. The Sharks losing 6 games in a row at the end of March, in a way, is that maybe a good thing that this team has faced this adversity going into the playoffs? Maybe it's a bit of a wake-up call for them?
Well, if you ask them, they'll certainly say, hey, better to have this now than, 3-4 weeks from now. I think they come out of this here and realize that when we get away from their game, they run into trouble. When they try to maybe be a little bit more east-west than they should be, not so much north-south, not able to establish a forecheck, not playing with a high level of emotion, that's kind of when this team gets in trouble. And so, I think that the message is hit home that they're going to need everybody as they go forward here, and once the playoffs start, they tend to think that experience from last season will be beneficial. They know what it takes, but the proof's going to be in the pudding. We'll see what happens once the playoffs start. If this team's able to sort of right the ship a little bit, or if what we saw in the second half of March is going to continue into the playoffs. It'd be interesting to see. I'm kind of curious about what this team's going to do and how it'll handle a 6 or 7 game playoff series here.
Yeah, hopefully Logan Couture and Big Joe are ready to go for the playoffs, because I think most people would agree that San Jose is a very interesting team as they try to get back to the Stanley Cup Finals. Curtis, thanks so much for joining us tonight on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, you bet. Anytime, guys.
All right. Thanks again, Curtis. Let's head to break. We're live. It's a late night edition. We've got 2 more segments to go. No, sorry, 3 more segments to go.
Get another coffee.
Yeah, we'll be back on TSN 1290.
On your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
I'm ready.
Up with it again. He's on the ice with Ginlock.
That, of course, was Sidney Crosby's golden goal from the 2010 Winter Olympics.
You remember where you were when it happened?
Absolutely. I was at Richie's house.
Yeah. Oh, anytime I hear the audio, it brings me right back to where I was, my old place on Grant Avenue, some boys over. What a tremendous memory that was.
Of all the Winter Olympics that have occurred since the NHL participated in... Well, that was 1998, was the first Winter Olympics. So I guess, what do you have, 5? 1998, 2002, 2006, 2010, 2014. 2010 was by far my favorite, and that's just because Canada won in front of the home crowd, right?
Setting the record exactly. for most medals and most golds, I believe. Remember how exciting that Olympics was? Canada kind of slowed coming out of the gate.
On the podium.
And then kind of there was the mishap at the opening ceremonies. Everyone was kind of laughing, and then I believe it was a skiing medal. This is going to bother me now, but we won gold, and I believe it was skiing. And yeah, Rory's giving me the thumb up, and it kind of just started the waterfall. The floodgates opened, and just the medals started pouring in. What an incredible! My favorite shot was of the Olympic Village at the end when Crosby scored the goal, and you saw like three guys on the roof of a hotel. How'd they get up there? How'd they get on that roof?
That was just an amazing time, and when. Obviously, well, let's get right into it. I mean, the big news coming out yesterday, Sean, the NHL Public Relations Department released the statement basically saying, frankly, that the NHL will not be participating in the 2018 Olympics in South Korea. The news came as a complete shock. First of all, I mean, do you buy the NHL releasing this now to not overshadow the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs? Do you buy that at all?
Yeah, like I kind of believe it, just so that all the attention can be on the players and the games, and players don't have to be asked about these questions, and kind of teams don't have to talk about it. It's just kind of in the back burner, and maybe when the playoffs end, they can reassess what's going on. But it's just heartbreaking news all in all. It's just terrible.
Sean, I want to play audio of the TSN insiders talking about the NHL's announcement and whether they believe that this is final and there still might be a chance that the NHL will participate in the Olympics. Then I want to come back and talk about it. And then I also want to play some audio that we have of the Winnipeg Jets, some of the players, Patrick Laine, Blake Wheeler, talking about the decision at the statement that was made by the NHL and how they're not going to be participating in the Olympics. Here's the TSN insiders talking about the news from yesterday.
They are the insiders, Bob McKenzie, Pierre LeBrun, and Darren Dreger. Guys, on Monday, the NHL drew a line in the sand. They said talks for the Olympic participation was going nowhere, so the talks are over. To quote them, we now consider the matter officially closed. Or is it, Darren?
Well, Pat Brisson, a power agent, told TSN 1050 earlier in the day that he's at least cautiously optimistic that a deal can still be reached. Now, that's his experience negotiating big contracts with top players around the National Hockey League. He doesn't believe that all parties involved in this process, be it the Players Association, the IOC, perhaps even the IIHF, have put their best option forward. So he believes that that is yet to come. Plus, the flip side to all of this is, Alex Ovechkin has said publicly he wants to go. What if there are 10 top NHL players that decide they're going? It would turn into an absolute gong show and could plot the owner versus the player, ultimately against the league.
Well, guys, I'm the never-say-never guy, but I'll tell you what, I just don't see a way out of this one at this point, simply because if the Players Association were not prepared to extend the CBA or offer something to the National Hockey League in exchange for the right to go to the Olympics before getting slapped in the face with the press release that they got on Monday, I can't imagine they'd be any more eager to do that now.
Well, I can tell you this, that I don't think the NHL wants this to be on the teams to decide whether or not they allow players. So at some point between now and the start of next season, I think the NHL will come out with the hard and fast rule as to what the ramifications are for a player going rogue. Now, in the meantime, you can expect the NHLPA to absolutely go grievance crazy and protect every player's right. If they want to go rogue, if they want to go to South Korea, the PA will fight this against the owners, against the league, to try and get them there. Here's the interesting thing, too, to me. There's such a cultural nuance so far, the reaction we're hearing from players. Alex Ovechkin, other Russian teammates, for sure, they're going, no asterisks. When you talk to players from other countries, they're a little more careful. Yeah, they're angry and they want to be there, but it doesn't seem like they're going no matter what, like the Russian players, and I think that's important to note.
If a multitude of players do decide to use the Alexander Ovechkin playbook, I think it's safe to say that the National Hockey League feels as though it's got levers or pressure points to prevent that from becoming a widespread problem. And if the National Hockey League is concerned about what Darren talked about, what Pierre talked about, and that is potential anarchy or chaos because this player wants to go here and that player wants to go here, they don't seem to be too concerned about it right now.
If this is indeed the end of the NHL participation at the Olympic Games, then the question becomes, what do you do with the head coach? I'm assuming
that would be it for Mike Babcock, no?
Yeah, because he'd be a little busy coaching the Toronto Maple Leafs and no different than most players. So what does Hockey Canada do? I can tell you they held meetings on Tuesday, are going to have more meetings this week about that and other topics. Who's going to play for them? Now, in terms of the coach, I think they would want someone with NHL experience, but someone who's also unemployed from an NHL team and available. Now, I know some people already are thinking maybe Ken Hitchcock. I think that's a long shot. I'm not sure that's something that's a fit for him at this point. But think along those lines. A guy who's been there, done that. And overall, a blend for the coaching staff that also has guys that know their way around an international rink.
Well, the federations right now, though, are working without any form of direction. Direction from the IOC, the IIHF, or obviously from the National Hockey League. But I can tell you that Hockey Canada does officially have a plan B, and that would be using European professional players, perhaps other professional players from North America as well, to the point where Hockey Canada might hold an evaluation camp this summer. The exact date hasn't been determined. The place hasn't been determined. Some are speculating that it could be in Calgary. Could involve 50 to 60 European professionals.
Okay, let's go back to the NHL now. Word out of Florida that Tom Rowe, while he may remain with the Panthers organization, will not likely be back behind the bench next season. What other hotspots should we keep an eye on?
Well, you're right, Gino. We've identified five potential hotspots, if you want to call it that, as the season unfolds. Obviously, teams have to do their due diligence. There's been lots of talk in Vancouver about the future of Willie DeJardin. Now, if Vancouver were to make a move on DeJardin, there's lots of talk about Travis Green and Utica being a potential replacement. Keep in mind, too, though, that if Lindy Ruff is not back with Dallas, and a lot of people think that's going to happen over the course of the offseason, DeJardin could be a candidate for that job. All eyes are going to be on Los Angeles. The season they've had, is somebody going to pay the price? Would it possibly be Daryl Sutter? Or could it be Dean Lombardi? One or both? We'll keep an eye on that. You mentioned the Tom Rowe situation. Florida would like to get a young up-and-coming type coach to go into that. And Doug Weight, the New York Islanders, he's done a great job. He's a great hockey mind. They've got to decide, do they want him behind the bench or do they want him in the front office?
For those not going to the playoffs, tis the season of change. They are insiders, Bob McKenzie, Pierre LeBrun, and Darren Dreger.
There you have it, the TSN insiders talking about the different possibilities if the NHL does not go to the 2018 Winter Olympics. I should mention that the announcement actually came out on Monday. Mm-hmm. You got to forgive me, Sean. It's pretty late. It's almost 11:30 at night. It's past my bedtime.
Way past both of our bedtimes.
Absolutely. So, Sean, I want to ask you a very simple question. On Monday, the NHL announces that NHL players won't be going to the 2018 Winter Olympics. But if you completely shut the door, do you think there still is a small chance that the NHL does go to the 2018 Winter Olympics?
I think there's a small chance. I mean, Gary Bettman said case closed, but what is it? There's nothing official. Nothing's been signed. Nothing's been sealed, certified. I mean, there's one thing that is for sure. The Players Association is not happy. The players want to go. Every dressing room around the league has been asked about these issues, and everyone gives the exact same response. The players aren't happy. The players want to go. The players are thinking that this is a great opportunity to grow the game that the NHL is missing out on. It's the same answers everywhere. One thing is the same. Everyone's angry.
Well, and Sean, on that topic, how much of this decision has to do with the fact that the NHLPA rejected the NHL's offer to extend the current collective bargaining agreement? The NHL basically said, the owners said, sure, we'll let players go to the Olympics if you extend the CBA to 2022, because right now, as it stands, the CBA expires in 2019, right? So is this kind of setting up the next, should I say it, lockout?
It's too late for the L word. Don't bring it right before I go to bed.
Yeah.
Nightmares.
Yeah.
No, please.
Yeah. It brings back nightmares definitely from 2012, the last lockout, right? But Sean, let me ask you this. Let's say that the NHL, this is the final decision and they don't go to the Olympics. Is this not necessarily a bad thing? Because what that means is that we're going to see minor league players from North America and Europe participate in the Olympics. Is it maybe in a way more exciting that we're going back to the roots of the Olympics and we're going to see amateur players representing their countries?
I'm not sure if more exciting is the term I would use, because you're limiting the best players playing each other on the biggest scale in sports. However, the storylines with amateur players is far more enticing. It's guys that maybe didn't get a chance to make it to the NHL, whose dreams were maybe cut short, couldn't make it for whatever reason. Getting an opportunity to represent your country now at the biggest stage of your hockey career, I mean, the smiles on the winners' faces will say it all. These guys will probably, it'll probably be the highlight of their athletic careers. And it's always great to watch that. It's always a fun experience. And realistically, as soon as the puck drops, we'll all be tuned in.
I agree with you, Sean. I personally don't think that this is over.
No, it's not.
And what do we have, 9 months to go before the South Korea Winter Olympics? I mean, there's a lot of time to figure this out. So right now it's not looking good, but I wouldn't necessarily say that this is case closed. Though Gary Bettman said that this is case closed, I think there still is a small possibility. I don't think I would say it's a great possibility that the NHL is going to the 2018 Winter Olympics, but I don't think we should say never right now, because I think that there's too much at stake growing the game in Asia and all of that. Sean, we're going to go to break right now. When we come back, we're going to play an interview that we conducted with Mike Halford of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk earlier tonight. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's a late night edition. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to a late night edition of NHL This Week with Illegal Curve. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, and he's Sean Assore. Drew Mandel is away this week. This segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. I had a chance to sit down and do an interview with Mike Halford of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk earlier tonight. Here's that interview. We are pleased to be joined by Mike Halford of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Mike, how are you doing?
Good, you?
Very good, very good. Thanks very much for taking some time to talk with us tonight. I want to start off with the big news of the day, the Pittsburgh Penguins announcing that defenseman Chris Letang will undergo surgery for a herniated disc in his neck. His recovery period is going to be 4 to 6 months. Can the Penguins repeat as Stanley Cup champions without Chris Letang in the lineup?
I really don't think they can, to be perfectly honest. I know that they've added some nice depth, and Ron Hainsey's there, and Mark Streit's there, and they're expecting Ole Mata and Trevor Daly to get back. And, you know, they probably got a little bit more depth spots 2 through 7 than they did when they won the Stanley Cup last year, but that's the thing, is it's that number one spot, and that's what Chris Letang filled so admirably last year during the playoffs. And I mean, you got to remember a couple things. Is one, he played almost 29 minutes a night, and he averaged 28.53 last year in the playoffs, and that was in large part because Daly got hurt, and they just didn't trust any other guy to log the kind of significant minutes that could take that workload away from Letang. It was almost like their six-man defensive unit last year was Letang and five other guys. And it wasn't just the volume of minutes that Letang was playing. It was the quality that he was playing. It was some of the best hockey that anyone's seen him play. 15 points in 23 games. He probably was in the conversation for the Conn Smythe right up until the bitter end, given how well he played. And I just look at the rest of the Eastern Conference right now, and that was kind of the thing that distinguished Pittsburgh from a lot of the other teams, is they did have that bell cow guy. He's not a traditional shutdown defenseman by any stretch, but he is absolutely 100% a top flight number one Norris caliber defenseman that can log the heavy minutes. And without him, there's just no replacing him. You can try and fill the gap, and you might be able to do it, but I think over the grind of where the Penguins want to go, four rounds all the way to the Stanley Cup final, I just don't see it happening. I just don't think they can do it without Letang.
Mike, yesterday the NHL announced that it won't be sending its players to the 2018 Winter Olympics in South Korea, and the reaction from players was expected a mixture of anger and frustration. Gary Bettman says this matter is now fully closed. Do you think this matter is fully closed? Do you think there's still a chance the NHL will go to South Korea in 2018?
I don't think it's fully closed. I think the door, the window, or what have you, is the slightest bit open, a tiny little crack. Not very much at all, but I think it's still there. You did notice yesterday that among all the angst and frustration from various players and agents, there were a couple voices that said, you know, I wonder if this thing is entirely closed. Alex Ovechkin, though not probably that nuanced in negotiations and tactics and such, did say he thought the NHL was bluffing. Pat Brisson, who's a prominent player agent, represents Sidney Crosby, did the media tour yesterday, and he said that he thought this thing wasn't entirely closed. The International Ice Hockey Federation, their spokesman came forth and said, okay, we understand where the NHL's position is. It's going to take a game changer, but maybe we can still try and fix this. So I think there was enough voices out there suggesting that there might be some wiggle room, that there might actually be some wiggle room. And I don't think there's much. I think the NHL wanted to make this very definitive, very bold move for two reasons. One is it gave a clear-cut message and kind of, you know, was a very significant threat and almost like we're taking our ball and going home. So maybe we're not necessarily leaving the playground altogether. We'll take a look over our shoulder, but we consider this matter quote-unquote closed. And the second one is they wanted to get out in front of the news cycle on this. They wanted to get this answer of the lingering Olympic question out of the way a week ahead of the playoffs so that the hope is the news cycle takes care of this. By the time next week rolls around, the Olympics are an old story and everyone's talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs. So do I think the window or the door is open? I do, ever so slightly, and I don't think it'll take that much to close it entirely.
Mike, in last night's game against Tampa Bay, a game in which the Boston Bruins clinched a playoff spot, forward Brad Marchand was ejected by the refs for spearing defenseman Jake Dotchin. Marchand will have a hearing tomorrow with the NHL Department of Player Safety. Do you think Marchand will be suspended, and if so, for how many games?
I think the most logical thing is you sit him down for the final games of the season. I guess that would be two left in Boston, that's it. I'd be shocked if he misses a playoff game for that. Though, if you do look at his history as a not just a repeat offender, but a chronic repeat offender, they may want to levy a more substantial punishment. And to be honest, that might be the play here from the NHL's Department of Player Safety, because if there's one thing I think you can say, it's that none of the suspensions and none of the punishments that Brad Marchand has had up to this point have acted as an efficient enough deterrent, because he continues to do the things that get him in trouble time and time again. Although I do think that spearing is, I don't want to make light of it, but it's pretty new to his repertoire. He's had a lot of different infractions, but spearing is something new. So I do think he will get suspended. I just think that you can't rack up the rap sheet that he's had, including the tripping and the slew footing on Cronwall and Strahlman from this year already that he went unpunished for. I think he's just been on the radar too much, and I think there's going to be a wrist slap. I think the only interesting thing here is whether it'll be the safe punishment, which is to sit him down for the regular season and let him come back for game one, or if they force him to miss the opening game of the playoffs. I think that'll be the real interesting thing here.
We're joined by Mike Halford of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk and Curtin Blog Radio on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Mike, the Columbus Blue Jackets have now lost three straight games, including last night's 4-1 loss to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Columbus has 116 points on the season. They're only 3 points behind the Penguins for second in the Metropolitan Division. In your opinion, is Columbus the biggest unknown heading into the playoffs?
I think so. The one thing that is known is that, barring something crazy going on, they've got Bobrovsky, which he's had about as solid a campaign as you can have from a goalie. The health has been there all year. He's only had a couple blips. In terms of performance, he's finished the season remarkably well, and he's going to be in that conversation for the Vezina if he's not already the favorite for it. So that's something that I think Columbus can go into the playoffs knowing that they've got. There's no question marks in net. The question marks are they going to be able to figure this thing out offensively? Because the offense has dried up entirely over the last 2.5-3 weeks. And that's something that they didn't have a problem with earlier in this year when the power play was clicking like crazy and they were racking up just obscene goal totals at home. I think they have 3 games this year at Nationwide where they've scored 7 or more goals. So, I mean, this is the big challenge now. And for John Tortorella coach teams, it's often been a problem in the playoffs because, you know, they're not known as the most creative bunch. Now, I will say this. A lot of guys that have scored pretty consistently through the year have gone cold at the same time. Chief among them is Cam Atkinson. So the hope would be that he manages to find a way to generate some offense and get the goals in the playoffs. But that's going to be their big question. There's no doubt about it. I think defensively and goaltending, I think they're going to be all right, although they are on a crash course with a really high-scoring team in Pittsburgh. I think that series is going to come down to if they can generate enough offense, because they're going to have an advantage without Chris Letang playing his usual 28, 29 minutes a night. But they're going to need to get some of these guys to break out of their slumps. And right now, if you look at it, it doesn't seem like any of those are on the horizon. It seems like there's a lot of guys on a cold streak.
The one first-round playoff matchup that is locked in right now is the Montreal Canadiens versus the New York Rangers. How do you think these two clubs match up against each other?
I mean, this, to me, is really going to come down to who can keep their emotions in check at the onset of the series, because I think there's going to be a lot of ill will and bad blood. There has been historically between these two teams. It really dates back to when Chris Kreider ran over Carey Price and the knee injuries, and then Price has taken subsequent shots at Kreider in following games. And I think a lot of people look at it and be like, oh, I don't really see the potential for a powder keg. But I think both teams realize that, you know, those first round series, the first few games in the first round always tend to be insane because guys are playing with their hair on fire. They're going 1,000 miles an hour. That's usually when you see the controversial hits. That's usually when you see the potential suspensions. And that's usually when these guys are trying to set the tone, not just for that first round, but for the rest of the playoffs. And I think you've already got this, you know, smoldering powder keg there. I think Montreal has the advantage. I think the one thing that they've really found under Claude Julien is some stability, some confidence, and not, you know, not falling apart at the first sign of trouble. They've shown some good resilience, and they've got Price playing locked-in hockey right now. So I think if they can kind of keep their heads above it at the beginning of the series and Price can be Carey Price, I think Montreal's got a decided advantage in that series.
We're joined by Mike Halford of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk and Curtin Blog Radio on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Mike, why aren't more people talking about the fact that Carolina Hurricanes forward Jeff Skinner's got 35 goals now?
Because he plays in Carolina, pretty much. I mean, it's through no fault of his own, but, I mean, it's just a forgotten market, really. It's a team that doesn't get a lot of national exposure. It's a team that is largely lacking star power, and I say that with the fact that Skinner is a former Calder Trophy winner and a very, very impressive player this year. And the other thing, too, is that Skinner disappeared for a couple of years. He had all the concussion problems. He wasn't healthy for a long stretch. But I think if you were to look at the goal-scoring leaders right now, there would be a lot of names that you would expect to see there, the Crosbys and the McDavids and the Marchands. And then Skinner would be there, and you'd kind of be like, oh, wow, how did this come about? Now, I think the other thing, too, is a lot of people that don't follow the Carolina Hurricanes don't realize the talent that they have up front. I mean, Skinner does benefit by playing with a lot of good, young, fast, skilled forwards. Sebastian Aho, Elias Lindholm, Victor Rask. Jordan Staal's had a pretty decent year offensively. Teuvo Teravainen's there as well. So it kind of works in his wheelhouse. Being a relatively young, fast, skilled guy, he's got a lot of similar players across the board that he can play with, and he's benefited from it. But you're right, nobody knows it's happening, and it's unfortunate because it is one of the nicer stories of this year. Moving forward, if Skinner can keep this kind of production and this, all these young guys can take another step, Carolina is going to be a very dangerous team, and you would think that more people would start to recognize them nationally as a result.
Mike, the Buffalo Sabres will miss the playoffs for the sixth consecutive season this year and second straight year since drafting Jack Eichel second overall back in 2015. In your opinion, what do you think Sabres GM Tim Murray needs to do in the offseason to improve this team and get them back into a playoff spot?
Well, that's the easiest question of the bunch. That's, he's got to improve his defense. I mean, it's a tire fire, plain and simple. If it wasn't that great last year and the moves that he made this offseason to address it just really didn't pan out. You know, outside of Ristolainen, who I think is a guy that they can build around, is talented enough to do that. The moves just haven't paid off. Kulikov was a bust, plain and simple. Cody Franzen's never found his footing in Buffalo. Jake McCabe's had an okay year. He's not fantastic, and he's a depth guy at best. Josh Georges is, I mean, he's been a good foot soldier for a long time, but he's pretty much done. They played Justin Falk a heck of a lot this year, and that guy's a fringe NHLer. And then you go down the list, and, I mean, who are the young guys on the horizon? Is it Brendan Gooley? I mean, is it Casey Nelson? These guys aren't considered blue-chip high-end prospects. You know, I really do think that Murray might have to look at the entertaining the idea of, you know, Evander Kane is eligible to sign an extension on July 1st, and Evander Kane would be a pretty sizable trade asset for this team to land a defenseman because they don't have it in the pipeline. There's not a guy in the future that's going to grow into that role aside from Ristolainen. And even if Ristolainen does become a bell cow, 25, 26, 27 minute a night guy and a pure number one, they're going to need a lot behind him, and they don't have it right now. So Murray's got his work cut out for him because, as we've seen, getting even just a top four defenseman can be extremely pricey. Ask the Edmonton Oilers, who had to send Taylor Hall to New Jersey for Adam Larson. So no mistake, that's their biggest area of need in Buffalo is to get a defenseman, and it's going to be very difficult for Tim Murray to do it.
Mike, last week, Florida Panthers forward Jaromir Jagr reiterated to TSN insider Pierre LeBrun that he is serious when he says he wants to play until he's 50 years old.
But do you actually think Jágr can play five more years?
I doubt it. I respect Jágr immensely, and I probably should have learned at this point not to put anything past him, but he's obviously slowing down. I mean, there's no mistake about it. I mean, this year, everyone will say, well, 16 goals and 43 points is terrific production from a 45-year-old, and there's no doubt that it is. But this is a guy last year that had 27 goals and 66 points. It's a significant drop-off in production. And even in that year where he split between New Jersey and Florida, he still had 24 goals and 67 points. And I understand that he didn't get to play with Barkov and Huberdeau for a significant amount of time this year. But I also think that that probably took its toll on him because he had to do a lot more heavy lifting probably than he envisioned. Now, I could definitely see him coming back next year. But at this point, it's a fool's errand to suggest that he can play till he's 50 because every year there's the looming specter of injury. There's the fact that, you know, he could just fall off a cliff one day. It does happen. Some guys go from being able to play to they just lose their legs. And it could happen with Jágr for as great of a player as he's been. So I'm not willing to go out on that limb, but I do think he'll definitely be back next year in his age 46 season, which is pretty crazy to think about.
Are you surprised that Calgary Flames captain Mark Giordano won't have a disciplinary hearing with the NHL Department of Player Safety for his hit that injured Ducks D-man Cam Fowler last night?
It was funny. I actually got the word from an NHL spokesman this morning and put the story out on Twitter and then through our site, Pro Hockey Talk. And the amount of venom and vitriol I got on my timeline from Anaheim Ducks fans sure seems to suggest that there's a large section, granted most of them are from Anaheim, that thinks that Giordano should have been called to the carpet for this. My take, watching it, I didn't think so. I didn't see much intent there. I think it might have been a bit of a reckless play. And yes, the puck was away from Fowler for a fairly significant amount of time when he was hit. But there was no penalty called on the play. Giordano insisted afterwards, although this could just be covering himself, that, you know, he didn't have any intent. It looked like a more mistimed and a tad reckless than intent to injure play. But, you know, good luck trying to tell a Ducks fan for that because Fowler's off to get an MRI today. The hit didn't look good. The way his knee bent didn't look good. The way he couldn't take himself off the ice didn't look good. And he's already in for an MRI. If they don't have Fowler, that's a huge problem for them because he's probably been their best defenseman all season long.
Mike, last question for you here, and I'm going to put you on the spot. With 5 days to go in the NHL's regular season, who's your favorite to represent the East and favorite to represent the West in the Stanley Cup Final?
A dream scenario right now for me would be the Washington Capitals against the Chicago Blackhawks in the Cup Final. I mean, I just think that the storylines would be off the charts, and I think it would be two terrific, you know, markets that have actually gone up against each other on the national stage. Remember a couple of years ago they did the Winter Classic in Washington when these two teams played. I think you'd have the Ovechkin finally getting that, or potentially get that elusive cup narrative there. You'd actually have the Russian superstar against the American superstar in Ovechkin and Kane. You'd have the glitz and glamour of this modern era with the Chicago Blackhawks. The two cities are close together, so there'd be some nice geographic stuff there as well. And let's be honest, it's the two top teams right now in the East and West. I mean, Washington is the class of the East, and the Blackhawks are the class of the West. So that's what you'd want to see. With all this anger and strife and arguing we've had about a flawed playoff system, if that's what we got at the end of it, Washington, Chicago, I think everyone will be pretty stoked.
Mike Halford of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk and Curtain Blog Radio on TSN 1040 in Vancouver, thanks so much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Right, take care, Mike. Hopefully we'll talk to you soon during the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Sounds good, bud. Take her easy.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Big thanks to Mike Halford of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk. We conducted that interview earlier tonight. Final segment here. We're going to do a quick out-of-town scoreboard, and then we're going to do a little bit of preview here of the Jets-Blue Jackets game coming up tomorrow. In case you missed it earlier and you haven't been following the station, Eric Comrie is going to get the start in net for the Winnipeg Jets, and Jack Roslovic is also going to make his NHL debut. So it's a double debut in Columbus. Only two games on the NHL schedule tonight, Sean. The Montreal Canadiens lost 2-1 to the Buffalo Sabres. That's okay, though. The Montreal Canadiens have already clinched first place in the Atlantic Division, and they're going to play the New York Rangers in the first round. They lost 2-0 to the Washington Capitals tonight, and the Washington Capitals have now clinched the Eastern Conference title and the President's Trophy. So the second year in a row that the Washington Capitals have won the President's Trophy. They've got 116 points. If they win their last two games, they can equal last year's total of 120 points. Truly remarkable when you consider that earlier in the season, it looked like the Pittsburgh Penguins were going to run away with the President's Trophy. So tomorrow, Sean, though, is the big night in the NHL. There are 12 games happening.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, it's pretty settled who's going to make the playoffs. There is an outside chance that the Tampa Bay Lightning get in. Right now, they are, I believe, 4 points behind the Toronto Maple Leafs for that last playoff spot. So that's the big game. You've got the Toronto Maple Leafs facing the Tampa Bay Lightning at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. The Toronto Maple Leafs can clinch a playoff spot with a win over the Lightning. You've got the Islanders and the Hurricanes. The Islanders also have an outside shot at making the playoffs. They're going to need a lot of help. Basically, the Leafs would have to lose all of their games. But a very interesting matchup to me is the Ottawa Senators and Boston Bruins, basically locked in right now to second and third in the Atlantic Division. So if Ottawa ends up winning that game, they can hold on to second in the Atlantic Division. Mm-hmm. And vice versa, the Boston Bruins, if they win, they would be second in the Atlantic Division. So some key matchups on the card. There are also some other games that don't have playoff implications. The Minnesota Wild are locked in. They've already clinched a playoff spot. But what's kind of interesting is when you look at the standings right now, the battle at the bottom in the Western Conference, right now you've got the Calgary Flames and the Nashville Predators locked in 7th and 8th, Calgary in the first wildcard spot. So that means that the Calgary Flames right now would play the Anaheim Ducks. We talked about it earlier. They play the LA Kings. So right now, the Calgary Flames could, in theory, move up. They can't actually move up, Sean. Edmonton is locked in. So right now, it's really between Calgary and Nashville. Basically, Calgary could go down to 8th and Nashville could go up to 7th. So basically, you're trying to avoid playing the Chicago Blackhawks there. Mm-hmm. Nashville has a shot at playing the Anaheim Ducks if they move up to 7th. So there are still many interesting matchups tomorrow. Let's focus on the Jets and Blue Jackets here. We've only got a couple of minutes. You know, we talked about it earlier. Eric Comrie is going to get the start in net. Jack Roslovic is going to make his NHL debut. The Winnipeg Jets are going to go for their 6th win in a row. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. They're not going to go to the playoffs, but would be truly remarkable if the Jets were able to win their last 7 games of the year. I guess, what are you looking forward to most in addition to the debuts of Eric Comrie and Jack Roslovic tomorrow?
Well, with regards to what I'm looking forward to, just you want to see that progress. You want to see the style of play that's been giving the Jets success as of late, carrying over, habits starting to form. You want to see puck management. You know, all the checklist of variables that the Jets need to improve on. You want to see maybe perhaps a power play goal or a perfect penalty kill. Just areas that the team kind of struggled in this year that could show a little bit of hope and progress moving into the offseason. Just with regards to Eric Comrie, it's such a cool story. Same with Jack Roslovic. You hope the guys come out fired up mentally and geared up for this and can give the hometown boy Jack Roslovic a win at home in his NHL debut and give Eric Comrie a W in his NHL debut, his 100th pro game.
And, Sean, it's also an opportunity for some Jets to pad their stats, right? Patrick Laine is still trying to chase Austin Matthews at 36 goals, so he's 3 behind right now, and Blake Wheeler trying to extend his point streak to 7 games. But as you mentioned, it's just going to be really fascinating to see both Eric Comrie and Jack Roslovic make their debuts and see if the Jets can keep the winning streak going.
It's a great story. Great move by the Jets. Classy move by the organization.
That's going to do it tonight on NHL This Week, the late night edition. Big thanks to all of our guests tonight. Mike Halford of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk, Hannah Spraker of the Fourth Period, and Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News. Big thanks to all of our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener jerseys. That's going to do it for us. We're going to be back Saturday morning at 9 o'clock with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Good night, everybody.